free radio tonight, you can, if you're interested in being on the air.
Okay. There was some kid here in a black sweater. He had a tape recorder with him. Yeah, and a microphone, and he tape recorded the entire thing.
He's at the jail right now.
Really? Okay, well, I'll have to go to the jail.
Do you know his name?
You know him.
I'm sure you know him.
Probably Wilma.
He works with the radio, he just said.
Okay, well, somebody's way ahead of me.
Yeah, he has a black sweatshirt and, like, shorts on.
I think
he's
going to be out that side guy.
This is Free Radio, 96.3 FM, your call-in radio station if anybody wants to call in. 427-3772 is the call-in number. I also want to remind you that Club Cruise should be on even as we speak. That's a community TV program. It's a rerun of a very good show on Miguel Gutierrez, running from 7 to 7:30 on Channel 71 for those of you who have cable TV. Miguel Gutierrez is another victim of Robert Artichoke Heart Attic, one of our local judges who sent him to jail for, I think it's 4 years. Was it four or was it seven? I'm not sure. I always confuse him with Brian Andrus, the guy the police shot down at his house and then sent him to jail. It seems that they're pretty good at covering up what they do. In this case, it was, I believe, an officer, Escalante, who ended up not liking Gutierrez and having him involved in an assault. In a crime that even the assailant didn't get an arrest for weeks and weeks after the crime, but he eventually went to jail for years, and that's where he is right now. And you can hear his mother and his sister, Maria and Claudia Gutierrez, talking about her on Channel 71. These also were activists, by the way, involved in the beach area plan last year when they successfully beat back the Charlie Canfield, Michael Rotkin City Council plan to essentially sell out the beach flats to the Seaside Company in favor of further development of the boardwalk. Then at 7:30, from 7:30 to 8:30 tonight on Channel 71, there's a live show, Voices from the Village, which is going to be talking about the Hate Crime Initiative. That's an initiative being promulgated by David Silva and others. Silva's a high-profile activist, most recently involved in the sleeping ban repeal initiative, unsuccessful but very articulate, intelligent, and well-intended effort to establish some sort of decriminalization of sleeping for homeless people, which, as those of you regulars know, is illegal in Santa Cruz. After 11 o'clock at night, for 500 to 1,500 homeless people every night, it is illegal to either fall asleep or to cover up with blankets anywhere in the city limits. The only exceptions are you can park your vehicle for 3 nights per month in a driveway. Only 3 nights per month in any particular driveway. You can park on a church parking lot with the written permission of the church, up to 3 vehicles per parking lot. And usually that involves, I think, only 3 or 4 churches have actually joined that program. So that's a total of 12 vehicles on any one night, which will be allowed in church parking lots legally. Or you can sleep in a backyard or fenced-in side yard out of sight on private property. In a front yard, you cannot sleep. And, of course, there is no campground. That was closed down by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and the City Council. The Rodkin Kennedy City Council. Now, of course, we have the Byers Sleeping Ban City Council, since currently it's illegal to sleep. Catherine Byers made sure of that in March of this year when she pressed the City Council successfully into reaffirming a $54 fine for every act of slumber after 11 o'clock at night. And in case people think sleeping tickets are not being issued, I will be playing an interview later where a sleeping ticket was issued. A woman named Patches, who is also being harassed for cleaning windshields in the New Leaf parking lot, got a sleeping camping ticket for not having a tent, not setting up a campsite, but just sleeping. And she got awakened at 2:30 in the morning by the police. So again, if you're interested in talking about any issues that we've been discussing, you can give us a call at 427-3772. We had hoped to have Anita Henry in the studio for a return discussion. She was such a great guest last week. She's on the Women's Commission, and she's also got her own medical marijuana service that she talked about quite articulately, but for some reason she hasn't been able to reach us or get back in to the studio today, so hopefully we'll have her on a future show. What we're going to do right now is play an interview with another free radio broadcaster up in San Francisco, Richard Edmondson, who broadcasts on San Francisco Liberation Radio. Let's hear what he has to say.
Okay, it's July 18th, 1999, and it's about 9:45. We have on the line Richard Edmondson, a broadcaster and activist in San Francisco. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Robert.
And Richard, you're back on the air without an FCC license and have been, for about 6 months? Is that accurate?
Yeah, since February 12th.
No problems, no knocks on the door, no landlord?
Oh, we did have a knock on the door, and I think it was either late February or early March. The FCC, 2 FCC agents came to our door and asked for permission to come in, and we denied them any permission to come in.
You didn't invite them in for tea and crumpets? Or?
Well, no. I mean, if I could get some kind of guarantee from them that they wouldn't go on a rampage, I'd be happy to serve them tea and crumpets. But a little problem when you let federal agents into your house, you never know what they're going to do.
That's true. We had the same thing last May when they wanted to inspect the transmitter, said they didn't need a search warrant. The 12-year-old girl here and told them that they did, and so they backed off, and then they served a few papers on me, but that was pretty much the end of it. I guess then later on they asked to subpoena phone records, and they successfully did that very quickly, but nothing has come of that either, so.
See, that's the thing, is they're always so hostile and subpoenaing records and making threats. You know, I'd be happy to invite FCC agents into my house, and we could sit down and maybe discuss our common differences, but that just seems to be impossible.
Yeah, and then wonders if they really have an interest in doing that, since they are, paid bureaucrats in this situation. One always hopes, one has this fantasy that somewhere, someday, one will have a meaningful, full conversation on this issue, which all these things will be fairly discussed, you know, but...
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason why we should be enemies other than the fact that they work for the government. That's what makes us enemies.
So, now, Free Radio, Liberation Radio broadcasts with a broadcasting radius of how much, or how far?
Broadcast radius, well, depends on which direction you're in from us. To the east, which is to the central part of San Francisco, we only reach about 3, maybe 4 miles. But to the south, which is kind of all rolling downhill from where we are, our signal travels about 10 miles.
Do you reach the Tenderloin, or do you reach the...
No, we go up to, from the beach east to about Canyon Street. People have said they've heard us in the Western Edition, and even as far as Van Ness Street, but it tends to be very spread that far away.
And your call numbers are?
93.7.
Wow. 93.7. I have a t-shirt with your call numbers on.
Oh, you got one of our t-shirts.
It's an old t-shirt, but yeah, I think I got it about 3 or 4 years ago.
Be happy to send you a new one.
Oh, well, that would be great. I remember that you were the faithful person who would always send us these great tapes when Free Radio was struggling along about 4 years ago here in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, we used to send out a lot of tapes all over the place.
Are you still getting information from singers like Carol Denny and satirical groups? Or I guess that was Free Radio Berkeley when that was gone.
No, I haven't heard from Carol in a while, but actually I did talk to her on the phone about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and she invited me to be on a cable TV show in Berkeley, and I just didn't have the time to make it over there.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have a show that features live musicians that airs every Tuesday night. And it's become kind of an open mic over the air.
Mm-hmm.
And all the singers and songwriters and musicians that live in our neighborhood come over and sing and perform their songs.
Well, I remember that what you were really famous for was your very professional kind of broadcasting from political events. And are you still doing that?
Yeah, we still do that. Of course, the war in Yugoslavia gave us plenty of opportunities to cover political events. A lot of protests were going on.
Any follow-up on the war since then?
No, I'm just glad it's over, but I think it's probably only a short time before the next one starts up.
Mm-hmm. How many hours a day does San Francisco Liberation Radio broadcast?
Well, right now we're broadcasting 6 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And we are, you know, thinking about expanding our hours, but we don't have any definite plans.
Are there other stations as well as Radio Ecce's back on? Or?
Not to my knowledge. As far as I know, we're the only station in the city of San Francisco, or at least the only ones that are doing it on a regular, you know, 7-night-a-week basis.
So, initially you were somewhat apprehensive after the Claudia Wilken court decision that kind of shut down Free Radio Berkeley last year, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, that decision was a great deal of concern to us, and we did go off the air for about 8 months, and we spent that time preparing an application. And in December of last year, we submitted our application to the FCC.
And have you heard from them?
We have not heard from them, no. It's been over 6 months, and we've not heard a word back, any response at all from the FCC over our application. But, you know, if you remember, that was what Claudia Wilken ruled against Jennifer on the grounds that he had not applied for a license.
Mm-hmm.
So we took that interim the few months that we were off the air there to file an application for a license.
I know that there's been lots of information written about the current FCC process of, I guess, they're investigating the possibility of licensing some micropower stations. Any comment on that process?
Well, there is that process going on, and the time limit for public commentary to be filed is, I believe, August 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
We're encouraging people to sign on to the National Wires Guild Committee on Democratic Communications comment, and their comments call for licensing of micro stations up to 100 watts. All stations non-commercial, one station per owner, and the owner must live in the signal area in the community which he or she broadcasts.
Mm-hmm.
They go into a lot of other stuff, but those are some of the...
Is there much chance that that proposal will be accepted by the FCC? Any inkling on that?
Well, the last I heard was that Chairman Kennard has said that the non-commercial issue was definitely on the table.
Hmm.
That's all I've heard. But anyway, the deadline for commenting is coming up on August 2nd, so I would encourage people who are interested in this issue to definitely either file comments of their own or sign on to the CDC's.
If you want more information about that, you can call the Free Radio Santa Cruz voicemail line at 427-4523. Leave your name and number, and we'll send you the information as to how and where to send these queries to the FCC, or this input, I should say, to the FCC.
And it is important, Robert, because the ultimate manner in which micro radio is legalized will have a lot to do on the general trend that the public commentary is going.
Particularly with the death of KPFA and other so-called previously listener-supported stations?
What's that?
I said especially with the death of stations like KPFA.
Well, that's a very sad thing that's going on at KPFA. That's a 50-year tradition, and it seems like we're witnessing the rapid disintegration of that station right before our very eyes.
Right. Although a lot of us have felt that KPFA has been sort of in the pockets of these corporate bureaucrats for years.
Well, it's definitely been going in that direction for a long time, but the events of the past week seem to have
catapulted it even further.
Yeah, it seems to have really, I don't know, the station just seems to be literally falling apart and disintegrating right before our eyes.
Well, it's also good to see the community rising up to try to speak its mind, however belatedly.
It is. That's encouraging. I hope that this lawsuit they're planning on filing is ultimately successful. But, you know, Robert, given the caliber of people occupying positions on the bench these days, I have to say I don't feel very optimistic for the chances of this lawsuit.
Well, you haven't got any confidence in the Rehnquist court?
You know, I think the people that are occupying positions on the bench these days are only marginally better than those who were there a century and a half or so that upheld the concept of black people being only three-fifths human. I just don't look at the wisdom of judges.
You're comparing Judge Rehnquist with Chief Justice Taney, or whatever his name is? I guess. Well, we're talking to Richard Edmondson with San Francisco Liberation Radio. Anything you want to conclude with or that we haven't covered that you think we should talk about?
Oh, I don't know. Just that people should get involved with micro radio, because especially now, since KPFA seems to be disappearing on us.
You also said there was some activity going on around homeless rights in San Francisco. There was some woman was arrested who had been giving out hate flyers of some sort.
We've been following this issue on our station for the past several weeks. There was starting in, I think around early June, there started appearing around town at uni bus stops, light poles, bus stations, and so forth. These flyers that were calling on the city to either get rid of all the homeless people or these people who were posting these flyers were going to, quote, buy guns and do it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think I actually have one of the flyers here. Let's see.
I think I know what you're talking about, because the Coalition on Homelessness, which puts out the San Francisco newspaper's street sheet, had also had some copies of these flyers, and they faxed them down here.
Yeah, in fact, you know, we interviewed people at the Coalition on this issue.
No, they actually had a deadline. First, I think it was July 1st, then it was July 6th.
Yeah, it was July 1st, and at 6 a.m. Well, here's what it says. It says, either you get rid of the creep, or we will buy guns and do it ourselves, 5! You have until July 1st, exclamation. At precisely 6 a.m. July 1st, the creep must be gone or the extermination begins. And then there's about 20 or 30 exclamation points after that.
Very intense.
Yeah, very threatening and very intense. Fortunately, the San Francisco police actually did make an arrest in this. They charged a 45-year-old woman who's a resident of San Francisco with making terrorist threats.
Huh, what was her name?
Let's see, I had her name, it was, Desiree or something like that, but I can't recall her last name. I think it is on our website if people would like to. I wrote up a report about it.
Yeah, what is your website?
We're at www.swift.net/tildegov.
Uh-huh.
People should look into the Diary of Resistance.
And if anybody has missed that email or that website address, just give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I will pass it on to you.
Yeah, we did get the woman's name. She's 45 years old. Obviously a mentally unbalanced individual, but she is being charged with felony, making terrorist threats.
But the people, really people who are doing the terrorist threats are mostly the police and things on other areas from the mayor and the board of supervisors.
Well, you know, that's true in a lot of cases. I have to, in a way, I have to laud the police for making this arrest. But at the same time, after they made the arrest, they didn't bother to tell anybody that they had made, that they had arrested this woman. So there was all this paranoia in the homeless community that could have been abated if the police had made a simple announcement saying they had arrested this individual.
It almost makes you think the police were not trying to discourage the paranoia, possibly to drive homeless people out of the area?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, you know, you have to remember that just 7 or 8 months ago, there was a slasher who was going around San Francisco slitting homeless people's throats while they slept.
Now, was that person ever captured?
That person was arrested. It was the person who claimed to believe that he was a vampire, and the police did make an arrest in that.
And was this person convicted?
I don't know. I don't know what the status of that case is.
But no further slashing apparently has happened, right?
No, but, I mean, anytime you see flyers threatening to kill homeless people, I mean, people in the homeless community know they have to take these kind of threats seriously.
No, yeah. No, I hear that.
A great deal of fear in the homeless community that the police could easily have abated if they had simply announced, hey, we arrested this individual.
When was the arrest made?
It was made on June 24th.
Oh, well, that's interesting, because I was up at the Coalition on Homelessness nearly a week later, and they had no information on that.
That's right. We talked to, let's see, it was June 29th, I believe. We called the police department. We talked to the hate crimes unit. We talked to several different departments within the police department, and nobody knew anything about this.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody could tell us anything about this.
And that was Richard Edmondson in a telephone interview a few days ago. He is broadcaster with San Francisco Liberation Radio. This is Super Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Bathrobe's Pierre Robert Norris, your host for the concluding half hour of the show here. Bathrobe's Pierre's Broadsides. Yeah, hate crimes apparently is becoming a hot button kind of thing, kind of a buzzword, and I'm glad to see that somewhere along the line, hate crimes against the homeless are getting a little bit of publicity, though I don't know if putting up signs on the edge of town is going to do too much. I tend to share the skepticism of certain right-wing KSCO skeptics who grilled David Silva last week when he went on KSCO. David Silva is one of the three folks who signed this initiative, and I would say probably the primary spokesperson for it. I certainly think he's using it as a bully pulpit. He's been talking to folks actually all over the world. Like, he was interviewed by Australian media a couple days ago, and I think tonight he's speaking at a Green Party meeting perhaps down at Loudoun Nelson. I'm not sure. I think I was told that before the show began. I myself gave a call to Ken Cole, the head of the Homeless Services Center, Karen Gillette's successor, for those who are following such things. I've been concerned that after over 20 beatings of homeless people in the last 6 months, they have one guy in jail as kind of a white supremacist nut, some youth as well, whom they don't give the name of, as a second person in jail. But no indication they're going to charge this guy with a hate crime, and no indication they're pursuing any of the other folks involved in these assaults. And it's generally been agreed by people assaulted it's a gang of four or five people. And what had been told us by Sergeants Baker and Clark and Officer Seeley, who spoke as a trio before the Homeless Services Center at one of the community meetings organized by Ken Cole, who does so about every month, and I regret that I actually didn't make his last community meeting, which I guess was on Tuesday for this month. They told us, these three officers did, that, they really had their eye on the people that were beating up Joe Barker and sent him to the hospital. They broke into this, these guys came in late at night into an abandoned building that homeless people had actually been given permission to sleep in. It was not an abandoned, it was empty. And they shouted, "Police, get up," and they started beating the homeless man, Joe Barker, with chains and a club. And a pipe, I believe those were the instruments they used. And there were four or five of them, including one woman, according to a witness named Ron, who was also there, who I interviewed at some length. And pretty frightening thing. The guy was sent to the hospital. We know that a man named Kenny had his eye beaten out. He was come upon by troll busters 3 months ago in a camp near the underpass near Denny's, Highway 1. We've heard from another homeless person that he says shots were fired in the Poganip in early June. That's an unconfirmed report, at least as far as any other homeless people go. But there are four, of course, confirmed police reports. That is to say, people who reported to the police that they were beaten, including Larry Cessna, Joe Barker. Actually, it's four incidents involving more than four people, more than four victims. And, of course, I've gotten reports from many more people. Many of those reports are secondhand, but confirmed. That is to say, they seem to have been given to me by more than one person. And the response of our city council has been sort of similar to what apparently Vinny said Chris Krohn told him when he said, look, the police are dragging away Steve Argue after having roughed him up. Do something. And Chris Krohn's benign, mellow response was, oh, well, it must have been some problem. The police wouldn't have done this for nothing. At least this is by the secondhand report of Free Radio Santa Cruz reporter Vinny. Similarly, with homeless people getting beaten up, we don't have any call or any public statement by Christopher Krohn requesting some kind of a safe area for homeless people where at least they won't be arrested for sleeping and can sleep in a group. I'm not suggesting that it necessarily be guarded by the police. I'm sure homeless people can guard themselves as long as they don't have to hide from the cops and from the troll busters at the same time. But neither Krohn, nor Sugar, nor Byers, nor Rotkin, nor Matthews, nor any of these other progressives voted in by the Santa Cruz voters have seen fit to call for this. It's interesting what it takes to get that. I have, for example, a story here from the internet. Serial killings spur relief for homeless women in Portland, Oregon. Amid fears that a serial killer is on the loose and targeting homeless women, the city has earmarked $125,000 for 30 new shelter beds so more women can find a safe place to sleep off the streets. The temporary beds will become available later this month at the Salvation Army Harbor Light Shelter. The shelter needs the extra time to hire more staff to operate 7 days a week. It's just a modest increase in the number of beds, City Commissioner Eric Sten said. It will certainly help provide a little more safety for women in a very vulnerable condition, but it doesn't do anything at all to solve the underlying problems of homelessness. Concern about the shelter needs of homeless women was piqued in May when three homeless women were found strangled in Forest Park. The killings prompted social service and religious groups to demand more emergency shelter and has heightened awareness of the dangers and difficulties of living on the street. So, even after three homeless women were strangled, they're still going to wait around for the Salvation Army to get its staff problems worked out before they open up 30 new shelter beds. It just shows you how cheap homeless life is, even in Portland, Oregon, where they actually forked out $125,000 for 30 shelter beds. In Santa Cruz, of course, had there been a serious disaster that affected middle-class people, they would have done what they did during the earthquake, set up massive tents, rushed in with aid from all sources and all directions, and of course, done something real and meaningful. Instead of established a homeless issues task force, which is what the city council has done, they actually voted to have, they put another person on the task force. We now have, I guess, a total of 10 of the 12 people on the task force. But it's not a task force we need. It's action on obvious issues. And a task force, of course, is a way of avoiding action on obvious issues. I guess for those who are optimistic, they say it's a way of preparing for action on obvious issues. But I've spoken about this before, I think. They have put a lot of good homeless activists on this homeless issues task force, Laura Tucker, Linda LeMaster, Lou Rice, Sherry Connable. But I'm afraid that it's more likely to make them more conservative and worried about saying the wrong things than it is to produce the real kinds of pressure results and high-profile protests that will get something done. Sounds like we have an incoming call here if our party hasn't hung up. Try calling back, party. We will definitely put you on the air if you'd like. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Let's take a little musical breather before moving on to some more interviews, which I got today on the street around the latest assault on homeless activist Steve Argue. But first, this music.
Cowboys, rebels, Yanks, and commies, buy yourself some real red-blooded fun. If you want to make the grade, you've got to have a hand grenade and a fully automatic GI gun. So buy a gun for your son right away, sir. Shake his hand like a man and let him play, sir. Let his little mind expand, place a weapon in his hand for the skills he learned today will someday pay, sir. That kid into submission till he's mastered nuclear fission. Buy him plastic warheads by the score. Once he's got the taste of blood, he's gonna sneak up on his buddies, starting his own thermonuclear war. So buy a gun for your son right away, sir. Shake his hand like a man and let him play, sir. Let his little mind expand, place a weapon in his hand, for the skills he learned today will someday pay, sir. Buy him khakis and fatigues, and sign him up in little leagues, and give him calisthenics as a rule. Once you've banished fear and dread, then pat his seven-year-old head, and send him off to military school. Oh, buy a gun for your son right away, sir. Shake his hand like a man and let him play, sir. Let his little mind expand, place a weapon in his hand, for the skills he learns today will someday pay, sir. Once he's grown to be a man, he might get tired of blasting granny, then you'll see a crisis coming on. Don't get worried, don't get nervous, send that kid into the service, let him rise into the Pentagon. the Pentagon. He'll ride the president, he will advise, his reputation growing all the while. With your picture on the wall, he'll get that long-awaited call and press the firing buttons with a smile. So buy a gun for your son right away, sir. Shake his hand like a man and let him play, sir. Let his little mind expand, place a weapon in his hand for the skills he learned, they will someday pay, sir.
So you observed the sergeant, and you think the sergeant took a dim view of what was going on?
Yeah, I think he looked upset at his officers, and I think that he was upset that the way they reacted to the situation, and I think that he wasn't going to say anything because he didn't want his officers to have any bad publicity, but it's all wrong.
Well, just Martin and Officer Barron, as far as the check goes.
Yeah.
But have any of the other officers engaged in any other untoward conduct?
Not that I can remember.
They were asking people for doing leaning against the wall?
They told us to move out of the way. They told us to move away from the scene. They didn't want anybody to see. They were afraid that people were going to say something like the bad cops in L.A. or something. I don't know. They're bad. They're just as bad.
There are no bad cops in Santa Cruz. We know that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yep. Anything else you guys want to add? Come to the station tonight. Talk some more if you want.
All right. Love, don't hate. Love will get you much farther.
And now a little tape from the KPFA protest last Wednesday. It looks like the protests are likely to be happening kind of one after another. The police come and arrest people at night in their tents, and then people return the next day by the hundreds to radio station KPFA in Berkeley. This is from last Wednesday, actually a week ago Wednesday, when there were more than 1,000 of us on the streets walking down University Avenue to the freeway, where we were stopped actually at 6th. And I'm getting a little hoarse by this point on the tape, but you still can catch the gist of what's going on.
It's about 7:35, a little bit earlier perhaps. Your correspondent here is getting a little hoarse here in Berkeley on July 14th. We're Curtis and University heading toward the freeway. Weather is getting a little chillier, sky is getting a little darker. But the crowd is big. There's still hundreds of people with us and passing by in the cars. Hundreds of people cheering us on from the safety of their vehicles.
What do we want? Free speech.
What do we want? Free
speech.
What do we want?
No.
Mary Frances Berry, shame on you. Again, cars are honking in positive support. A car has run under a median here. I'm a little confused as to which way he should go as he turned left on San Pablo coming up University. It's about 7:45, and across University Avenue, on the sidewalk, a lane away from the protesters, they fill about a quarter to half a block of a lane in tight formation. This largely black neighborhood, folks stopping to wave, smile, support. Hey, hey, ho, ho. We want free speech radio. And down at the freeway, there are squad car lights flashing. There's a thin line of police down here at 6th Street. I'm not sure what kind of police they are. I suspect they're not Berkeley police, but maybe they are. Because Berkeley police have not been stopping the marchers. But who knows, maybe they've been given orders to stop folks at the freeway. Let's see what Russell Bates, that man about Berkeley, has to say about the situation.
There's about 28 of them. They got a highway patrol officer with them.
Looks like a butt out. There's a sign of this one man with a gag on his mouth. So the officers are standing, clubs in hand, blocking traffic coming in and blocking the marchers from going to the freeway. Marchers are entering the 6th Avenue University intersection. Dan Jones is
down at the line.
Shoved one man back. The protesters are sitting down here in the crosswalk next to the police. And the organizers are suggesting they're going to be arrested.
Quiet! Listen!
Those who don't, go to the back. So it looks like about 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, several hundred people, couple hundred people looks like.
Are the people who are presently gagged and sued? Is there anyone who has not signed in so that we have your name, date of birth? Okay.
Sir.
Hold your hand up. Okay, there's a woman behind you. We need your name, your date of birth, and your phone number. If you do not have ID, let us know if you're on parole, probation, if you have an outstanding, or if you are in the country without proper documentation, you do not want to be arrested today. Okay? If you have any contraband at all, you do not want to be arrested with it. Don't smoke it, just give it to a friend.
Wow, there's smoke right under the tattoo.
Okay, folks, as you know, Pacifica today delivered a knockout blow to the communication system of the progressive movement. A knockout blow. They took over KPFA radio station. They censored Democracy Now, the only progressive radio station nationally. They censored it today. They arrested the entire news department last night. We have a crisis now in progressive grassroots communication. If they knock out Pacifica, they have ripped out the vocal cords of our entire movement. Are we going to let them?
No!
Outcome of this was, after some discussion, and I was not entirely pleased with the action of Van Jones, who is an attorney, a black attorney, who has made some really good presentations at police abuse rallies, but he didn't allow a lot of dialogue, which I thought was unfortunate, And eventually, folks decided, instead of, say, walking forward to the line or walking through or getting arrested, it kind of cooled things out. Folks instead went back to the radio station with the idea of taking back KPFA. Of course, by that time, police had surrounded the station, unlike earlier in the day when there were no police in front of the station, and that was really out of the question. I think later that night, seven people were rather brutally arrested on a ladder as they tried to climb to the balcony of the station. And every night thereafter, they arrested some more people, frequently just for camping in front of the station. So the battle for KPFA continues, and I'm going to try to give you more tape on it as I hear from it, or as I get reports from Berkeley. There are a number of folks up there who I talk to regularly, and you'll be getting more information on that. Here's a report from Santa Cruz, from one of our local homeless people, Patches, who washes windows in the parking lot of New Leaf Market.
To
Patches.
And Patches, who I've occasionally called Peaches in the past, you and your associate are doing some window washing, some car window washing, but you said the police didn't like this recently. What happened?
No, yes, there's a Filipino police officer down there that continues harassing us as far as anything goes. Washing windows, which is our livelihood. We finally got permission from New Leaf to go ahead and do that.
When did you get that permission?
Last week, so that would be whatever.
More or less last week.
Okay. And I asked the officer at the time, I said, well, how do I go ahead about getting a permit? Because I had to get a business license. Well, he didn't have any information on that part.
You have the name of this officer?
No, I do not.
And has he approached you more than once?
Or? Oh, yes, more than once.
How many times would you say that you remember he's approached you?
Three or four times.
In the last month?
Uh-huh.
And what issues?
Washing windows, basically.
Did he say there have been complaints, or did he just say that that was appropriate?
Just because I don't have a business license.
I see.
So I asked him how to go about what was the proper way to go ahead and get a business license, and he didn't have a clue. He didn't have a clue how to even tell me to do that. In fact, Bob, the town host, just stopped me and told me how to go about doing that, to go to City Hall and told me exactly what to do about it. But,
so there was an application fee?
No, that wasn't mentioned. So I imagine there is.
Have you stopped washing windows? I know the city associate
is. He's got the permission right now, so I'm just like backed up.
Yeah, does he have a business license?
No.
So, but he hasn't been hassled for it. The officer just doesn't want to see women working. He doesn't want to see the gentler sex forced to work. Could that be it?
Yeah.
Probably not. So you say you've also gotten camping tickets? Or a camping ticket?
A camping ticket, which was on private property, so I was out of line on that. But,
a complaint from someone on private property?
Yeah.
And where more or less was it?
It was behind the building by the CB shop back there. The pipeline.
So it was commercial property?
Right.
So you weren't like in somebody's backyard?
No.
Were you leaving a huge mess pooping and peeing?
No. Cleaned it up every day. Would be out of there by 7:30 and cleaned up the whole area. Never left any mess. Never,
When did
ever.
You get the camping ticket?
This was about a month ago.
And what have you done with it?
Nothing.
Okay. Was it action by an officer or action because of a complaint, or what was it?
The officer said there was a complaint.
Who was the
just
officer?
Just because we were there. I call him Officer Michael. I don't know his real name, but that's his first name. And he was polite about it, you know, but just told me. This is like, they wake us up at 2:30 in the morning and said, what are you doing? What are you doing? We're sleeping.
Right.
You know, I mean, that makes common sense.
How many cops involved?
Two.
How many of you?
Three.
Did you all get tickets?
No, I just did.
Why did they ticket you and not the other two?
I don't know.
Again, maybe they're trying to show a special kind of deference to you as a woman. You're the only woman there?
Uh-huh.
Sounds
now,
like
you're an inventory. Maybe I'm just a, you know.
No, wait. You haven't been all this.
Okay.
I got a ticket last week for an open container.
Right.
And a citrus can.
A citrus can?
A citrus can.
That sounds pretty serious there.
Yeah, a citrus can. You know?
Uh-huh.
He didn't smell it. He didn't take me in to test me.
Uh-huh.
Nothing. He just pours it out.
What time of day was it?
About 2:30.
Where was it?
On the mall.
And were there any witnesses?
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody.
Did you comment that, in fact, he was arresting you for a soft drink?
Yes, I did. Uh-huh. I said, how can you get arrested for a citrus cap?
Well, what do you feel is you deserve hard liquor and you're drinking the wrong kind of thing? William, you were an advocate for the homeless down in San Diego. Tell us a little bit about that.
We started a coalition for the homeless.
When was this?
This was in 87.
Yeah. Larry Milligan around then?
Larry Milligan.
Probably not. He actually did a fast in San Diego about a year and a half ago. It opened up a 24-hour restroom.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he feeds people down there, or was feeding people. I guess he stopped recently, but they were threatening, you know, they didn't like homeless people being fed in public places.
Right, we had a problem with that too when I was down there. We had a lawsuit against the city over some salary. Because we used to feed 600 3 days a week.
And who's we?
The Coalition for the Homeless. We started with all homeless people, one Mexican advocate, Denise Duchaney, who was the attorney, and now she's like city council there now. And we just started from, it was like a grassroots operation. We started from the ground up. Didn't take any contributions from anybody. We solicited our own funds, and it was fun. It was different.
How long were you working with us?
A year and a half.
And what do you think you accomplished?
More of a voice for the homeless when we were in San Diego. At first it was like they were getting more bed space. We advocated for more bed space. We advocated for more police were getting where they were taking the carts and throwing all the belongings out. Then they came up with a campaign called Illegal Lodging, where they were giving out people illegal lodging tickets. So the ACLU came in and helped us out and filed suit against the city because how can you be illegally lodging if you don't have anywhere to lodge? You have to be able to lay somewhere. So it's
to say the least.
Yeah, so it was like, it's illegal to be poor. So we went to court with them for that, and it was different.
Did, what's your perception of Berkeley now? I mean, is it legal to sleep in Berkeley on the streets if you're homeless, except in front of KPFA? So?
I don't think so. I know most of the parks you can't sleep. I see a lot of people sleeping. I just got out of a shelter, matter of fact. But I sleep over way on the west side, so over near the racetrack, so the police don't hassle me, because I know they do hassle a lot of people sleeping in the streets or in the parks. The parks are supposed to be closed at night. So,
what about on the sidewalk? Is there a law against sleeping on the sidewalk?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, I assume they could have arrested all of you. Of course, I guess they don't want to, really.
There's a lot of support. You hear the horns going by.
Right.
I don't know. It's a big issue. Yeah, it's an issue not only of Pacifica but of the freedom of speech. And so I get kind of, you know, worried about what they want to do.
Well, thank you, William.
Okay.
Just had a shocking piece of information. Now, what's this about a porta potty kidnapping?
I won't do it.
Tell me the truth.
I had to wait. Somebody was in it.
So in other words, we're talking about the arrest that happened around 3:30 this morning?
Yeah, the porta potty actually didn't leave the premises till about 6.
I see. So the porta potty was given a stay of execution?
Yes, it was.
For the KPFA protest?
Absolutely.
And I see you're here in your Volkswagen vehicle. What's your name?
Jerry White.
Jerry, what are you doing with this crowd of malcontents?
Trying to get some peace and rest and everything else.
Yeah. Well, we should have a place to go to sleep. It looks like some folks are crashing on the sidewalk.
Yeah, well, they woke us up at 3:30 in the morning and made us move our sleeping accoutrements, including couches, foam pads, and everything else. And these people are tired. They've been up for days.
It does look like, well, still people are coming by. I think you may get a fresh infusion of blood in the hours.
Well, we were waiting. We were thinking there should be 1,000 people here by now. Everybody should be pissed off. And what about the concert? And we're waiting. We don't know.
Dude. Now that they went to the concert, now I guess they're They're moving to San Anselmo or something. I don't know.
It's the week. They might be at work, you know. Maybe the weekend. Well, there's some rallies and stuff on the weekend.
Well, there's supposed to be a rally this evening.
It's
some sort of a concert as well.
I gotta go back to Sonoma County tonight, though. I won't be here for tonight, but I'll be here on the weekend.
And that is about it for Bantam Spears Broadsides tonight. I'm going to be followed by, closely followed it appears, by Uncle Dennis's Earth First Show. Uncle Dennis is a demanding host. He demands you have paper and pencil ready. So if you're going to get a beer, but get that pencil and paper ready. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. We're going to be returning the show, that is, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides on Sunday at 11 o'clock in the morning. We have our long version from 11 to 1:30. If you have any questions between shows, comments, want to be on the air with anything, or have any news, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. We'll go out on the tunes of that old folk singer who was a one-time radical of a sort, Tom Paxton. Time for you guys and you gals to become some one-time radicals. We can use them, even if it's only one time. Hope to see you on Sunday. This is Bathrobe's Pierre Robert Norse signing off. Stay tuned for Uncle Dennis with Earth First.
I've a thing or two to tell you that I think you ought to know about that rusty bucket Sully carries down below. You're not the first one, stranger, that has laughed at Sully's pail. You're the only one that's laughing now. The rest has heard this tale. Sure, when we was young and handsome, had some 10 years in the game, old Sol, he had a partner, and Jim Riley was his name. They had knocked about together Bingham, Butte, and Coeur d'Alene, and they brawled in every bar room from Ely to Fort McLean. Now me and old Ted Johnson, sure you'll not remember him. We was working at the Raris, had a stope with Sol and Jim. The four of us together, we was working side by side. That's how come I chanced to be there on the night Jim Riley died. Well, the blasting had been easy, it was coming out like sand. And we was mucking out the ore, those days we mucked by hand. And we was nearly finished, and I hadn't heard a sound. But something must have happened, for Jim Riley yelled bad ground. When we headed for the timberin', Sully must have took a spill. For when we looked back in there, he was pinned beneath his drill. The ceiling, it was groaning now, all set to drop the lid. And Sully, pinned beneath his drill, was sobbing like a kid. Well, there's men can watch their partners die, not throw their lives away. But Riley wasn't one of them, he wasn't built that way. As soon as he seen what happened, hey, hold on there, Sol, he cried. And before he had the words out, he had thrown the drill aside. They come around the ore car, Riley wearing a big grin. Guess he never knew what happened when the hanging wall caved in. Sully reached the timber in, his face as white as chalk. And Riley, 2 yards back of him, caught 15 ton of rock. That day Sully's pail was buried, he ate from Riley's pail in tears. And he's carried that same bucket now for more than 20 years. So you can laugh at Sol because he's mean and drinks a lot. But don't laugh at Sully's bucket. That's the only friend he's got.
All right, thank you, Robert. And it's just about 8 o'clock here in Free Radio Santa Cruz land. 96.3 is where you're tuned, and what you should stay tuned for is Earth First Radio. From the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
Chainsaws kill the trees, suffering everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. How can we stand by while this all takes place? We've got to stop. We're seeing you in red.
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Each week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about the folks who are killing the planet and folks who have detailed information about saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, and web addresses. So, like Robert says, please get a pen or a pencil and some recycled paper to write down the information, because this isn't Couch Potato Radio, it's Activist Radio, and I urge you to take the information down and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree set, or locked down at the road blockade in that dragon. If you have information or announcements or comments for Earth First Radio, please keep your pencil handy and listen for the content.